Bang! That bloody bottle smash!
If it's not behind me, it's across the road from me or beside me. I hate the bloody thing. It's one game I hate. You hit a smash of the bottles and the bang of the ball hitting corrugated iron scares the living daylights out of you. Like, what's wrong with the ride? What's wrong? Bang, bang, bang. Bloody bottle smash again. Fine. Turn the music up a bit louder. So I can't hear it. You still hear it anyway.
Long story short.
G'day, this is Long Story Short, and I'm Mike.
And I'm Jesse. And this week on the show, we're in the show.
In the show.
The carnival. Don't you remember that as a kid? You've got the games.
Now, to win this game, you've got to get me a bullseye.
Oh, yeah, then you've got the guy who spruiks the game.
Roll up, roll up, step right up, come in, come over, try your luck, pluck a duck, win a prize. Every duck's a winner here today, there's no losing.
Well, then you've got show bags.
A show is not a show without a show bag, anyway.
Then there's the behind-the-scenes people.
I met a painter called
Manfred. I paint the pictures on the carnival rides.
And you know all those sweet, beautiful rides you travelled on as a kid?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the inspiration for all those pretty pictures, they might not come from where you'd expect.
Well, they all come actually out of my collections of comics, sex books.
Sex books? You get pictures from sex books. You're revealing your trade secrets.
This week on Long Story Short, we're going back to your memories of show bags and fairy floss of candy, of the Ferris wheel, of the bucket games.
We're putting sauce all over that Dagwood dog.
Have you ever actually had a Dagwood dog?
No, I haven't, but I want one. Today, we're eating the Dagwood dog on Long Story Short.
Later on, you'll meet the Bell family. They've been on the road for generations. They're a travelling show family. And find out what happens when the carnival lights go off.
But first, did you ever think about running away to the show, Jesse?
No.
Well, when you're living in a regional country town like Bryony Doyle was when she was a kid, the show is like one of the biggest things of the year when it comes around. So it's not that surprising that she really wanted to be part of it.
We got the day off for it. Attendance essential. And it always seemed to me like the show was a more exciting version of the real world. All the boring everyday stuff was there, sure, but dressed up with flashing lights and tin ducks. Take show bags, for instance. At six, they're a microcosm of a child's economic future. I remember agonising over the ratio of edible to wearable treats, Princess or Pirate, Fido Dido or Birdie Beetle. Show bag investment is as important as what kind of person you want to be. It was at the show that I got my first taste of ambition. Even a child can grow a massive zucchini or stitch a portrait of Jason Donovan on a pillow. Every year of my early life, I spent hours on show day peering enviously up at the blue ribbon macrame and jam, wondering exactly what it was that marked genius from mediocrity. By adolescence, I wouldn't pickle if you paid me. I only wanted to compete for something else. Boys. The Pantera t-shirt wearing boys that lingered behind the Gravitron smoking Winnie Blues. I wanted to be them, to live an endless showtime. I was 20 before I got my chance. A friend saw the ad while leafing through the classifieds in the Northern Territory news. When she showed me, a surge of desire rose in my throat like a pie in a Gravitron. Show attendance wanted. After years of looking in from the outside, the show was finally opening its arms to take me in. I could squint and see the future. Myself as a wise, laconic drifter, far from the demands of the so-called real world, locked into a deep romance with one of those Pantera-loving boys, now matured into a rogue commander of the mysteries of the road. A man whose voice sounds like freedom, and jeans smell like bong water and pony rides. We'd spend our days drawing in the suckers to the rifle range. Life would be one long, dizzy ride.
Not hard to do.
At the showground, they had different ideas. They pointed without looking at my friend and I. She'll work Larissa's lemonade, and you can get set up dipping Dagwood doggies. I tried to keep my chin up, but no matter how I battered and salted it, a 16-hour, 40-degree day on my feet in a 2-metre box with a deep fryer was not romantic. Come on, love, the cowboys joked as I dipped another doggy in the sauce pot. Looks like you could get that in a bit deeper. Yeah, that's right. Get it soaking wet. I blushed red as sauce, thinking up a dozen puns on wiener, but the deep fryer lady was listening, and for some reason I feared her. Soon my eyes streamed from the dust. My skin bubbled under splats of hot fat. I still gazed longingly over at the sideshows, but now it was not a magical other life, but simply a slightly more tenable job. By lunchtime, I'd had enough. I took my break at Larissa's Lemonade, where my friend was in a similar predicament. "This is really, really boring," she lamented. The people were rude, the product was overpriced, and the wage was below minimum. Worse still, there was no way out. Larissa said no dough if we don't make it to the finish line. And so we hatched a plan. Rather than confront our bosses, we'd simply steal from them. We'd pocket change until we'd amassed a wage, and then we'd abscond. Simple. I headed back to the doggy stand with renewed ambition. If not a carny, I could at least be a crook. I dunked dogs with unprecedented enthusiasm, smiling sweetly while I snuck coins from change pouch to pocket. But before you could say, "You want sauce on these puppies?" my friend was standing at the counter. "I'm done. You're leaving?" I couldn't believe how quick she was. She'd found a prodigious talent for theft, amassing over $100. In my pockets, I had less than the price of a princess bag. "Are you coming?" I shook my head. "Save yourself." 7 more hours passed like a long decade. I felt I had aged and died in that doggy van. Now I was just a shadow hunched over the sauce pot. "I can't do this again," I told the deep fryer lady at knockoff, handing in my apron. "I'm really sorry. I'm just not cut out for it." She shook her head with disdain. I was weak as piss, and worse, I'd have to come back tomorrow to get paid. But by the next day, the news of Larissa's lemonade heist was all over the showground. When I arrived to get my pay, 3 sideshow boys bailed me up against the side of the doggy stand. "Where's your friend?" they spat at me. "Where's that mongrel friend of yours who ripped off Larissa's lemonade?" "I have no idea, I swear." "You tell us where the hell she is." They held me there, shaking against the hot tin. From inside, the deep fryer woman called out, deadpan, "Someone go and get Gary." No, not Gary. I fought visions of myself chained to the fryer, working off my debt. A life as a show slave, an example to newbies. Here's the girl who thought it was a lark to rip off Larissa's lemonade. Gary demanded respect with his long strides and longer hair. In his presence, the vengeful mob fell to an expectant hush. "This her?" He looked me up and down, very slowly, taking in every part of me. My stupid, nervous smile, my weak, burn-marked arms, my hay-fever-hued eyes, my foolish, show-loving heart. He crushed a cigarette under his boot and turned away, staring out toward the dodgems like some reluctant soothsayer. "Leave her alone. She don't know nothing." All the air came out of me like a deflating jumping castle. Gary had saved me. Disappointed, the mob soon dissipated. There'd be no blood sports tonight, only endless sitting ducks and strongman games. In a sideshow alley, where my name was Mud, the show went on. Gary lit a cigarette, and we stood together, hanging over the fence of the four-wheel motorcycle pit as the great red northern sun sunk. Has it been a good show?" I was eager for the redemption that only Gary could grant. "Yeah, it's been a good show. Been a real good show. But you know what? Tomorrow, we'll pack all this up and move on to the next town. Every day is a show for us. Here or some other place. Pack it up, move it on, start again." It seems like a very cool kind of life. The yearning envy clawed at me again despite the lingering smell of batter in the air. "It's all right. But I'll tell you what, you don't become this. You're born into this."
The Lemonade Stand Heist was written and read by Bryony Doyle. She no longer has dreams of joining the show. Instead, she writes from her home in Melbourne. Music for that piece was composed by Geoff Bush.
Long story short.
Mike, when you were a kid, what was that very first memory of yours about the show?
I remember playing those games. You know the games where you got to throw a ball at a milk tin or something?
Yeah, get the ball in a bucket. All the games in the Sideshow Alley.
That's right, Sideshow Alley. That's right. And I remember being really upset for not winning a big toy because I couldn't do it. I knew it cost my parents a lot to be there, and they'd spent money for me to have a go at this game, and I lost.
You know, you probably could have bought one of those toys for like $5.
Probably. Maybe, yeah. But it's not the same. There's something about being there in the moment and earning this prize.
And I guess as a kid as well, those games look so easy, almost deceptively easy.
They do look easy. Maybe that's why people resent carnies so much.
Well, I've got to stop you there for a moment, Mike, because you can't call these people carnies.
Oh, we get called carnies.
Carnies actually a British saying.
People from overseas might use that term, and we're happy just to be called a showy, you know, a travelling showy.
The names just keep going and going and going.
They get called other names too.
A-holes and F-wits and all the rest of it.
This guy Tyson is big bloke, tall, big goofy smile. He was telling me as the show moves, sometimes carnival people aren't always welcome.
They don't stop and think about what we are actually contributing to that community when we go in and do our shopping and buy our clothes, our shoes and all the rest of that. We're all bringing money into your town. We're giving you fun while we're in town. What more can you ask for?
So, back to the games.
What is it about that Sideshow Alley that keeps sucking you in? Every show you keep going back there, even though you probably haven't won the big fluffy toy. What is it about that? Why do you keep going back for more?
There's something inside you that thinks maybe there's a chance I could win that oversized, gigantic rabbit.
Is it just that there's a really, really good sales pitch?
Catch a duck, win a prize. Who's the next? Who's waiting? Come in, come over, win a prize. Easy to win, easy to play. Fun for everyone here today.
When did you realise that you had this gift?
Probably from birth I realised I had this one, so it's my claim to fame. People have, you know, lots of things to look at, and there's lots of rides with noises and music, and there's balloons popping and popcorn crackling and fairy floss being spun. There's a lot of things, so you need to do get something to look your way, whether it be a coloured light or a nice sound or me with my voice.
Roll them down, knock them over. Who's the next? Come in, come over, give it a try. Seen the rest, play the best. Come over, give it a game. Who's the next on this one?
My name is Mark Harrington. I'm a travelling showman. I've been a travelling showman all my life. So I own the entertainment game, some rides, depends on the show, depends on the place, but yeah, either the amusement games, the amusement rides, or I could be a clown walking around. You know, back in the old days, and the tradition is you put on a show, it's a showmanship. We're trying to bring tradition back, whereas it seems to be lost a little bit now, and everyone's all out for the quick dollar in the quick shops, and no one seems to be having fun and playing with themselves and having a gram, and then just generally having a laugh with themselves. I think that's been forgotten. The bigger the score, the bigger the prize. You know how it's done. You've seen it before. Bust a balloon, bust a bubble, Barney Rubble. Who's going to be the next? Appeal to each person. Appeal to their charisma, appeal to their personality, and hopefully it works from there. You know, you might be the hoopla, might be the laughing clowns, but you know, you've got the basketball games, you've got the knock-em-os, the tin can knock-ems, the buster balloons. Each game's got their own little spiel that you have to sort of cater for, and basically like a commercial, like an infomercial. You have a little jingle and people get used to them. Redux a winner here today, there's no losing, play till you win. Who's going to be our next big winner? You pick them, we pay them, out they go. It's all in the name, actually. It's showmanship. That's what you are. You're a showman. You're out there to have fun and not take yourself too seriously, because at the end of the day, life isn't this serious, you know? Like, all these people worry about making their car payments and making their power bill payments, and all they're doing is run around whinging about everything instead of having fun. That's what life's about. Have a bit of fun. If you can't have fun at yourself, who can?
The game I never really got, it's the one where you put ping pong balls in a clown's mouth.
But that's the one you always do as a kid. Like, that's the first game that you'll play.
I know, but if you think about that, like, who invented, like, putting a ping pong ball in a clown's mouth? I never really got it.
All in timing. Yeah, that's the main thing. Get either the highest score or the lowest.
At the end of a show, there's this weird, eerie vibe that happens. Like, after such a fun atmosphere, everyone just wants to get the hell out of there. And while people were packing up, I met this lady who stood out because of what she was doing.
I've now got the next cover to cover up this clown. I'm pulling it over its head. And there it is. It's covered up, all ready to travel.
Can you describe what this is?
It's a green canvas padded bag that goes over the head of the clown.
Now, what does it make them look like?
They look like Ku Klux Klan, in my opinion. not that it's any... not to be anything like that. It's not too...
Not on purpose. It's all, not on purpose. Why do you do it?
If anything drops from up top, it stops the clown getting damaged.
Well, their mouths are wide open, so...
Yeah, well, they could get anything in their mouth, couldn't they?
I mean, you're doing this with the... While everyone's packing up, what have people's reactions been to see this sort of smothering these clowns?
In the past, I have had some reactions, scaring the kids, etc.
Well, they're pretty scary to start with. That's the thing.
Well, yes, they are.
And then a lady sort of smothering them with a canvas bag.
Well, it ends their life, doesn't it?
But then you're the person that brings them back to life,
oh,
I guess.
I resurrect them with mouth to mouth when we get to the next town.
You're listening to Long Story Short on RN, and today we're going behind the scenes of the travelling show.
Yeah, home's where your caravan pulls up, that's home. You don't need much more than the caravan when it's all said and done.
Elwyn and Arthur Bell are brothers, and they've been travelling showmen for generations.
I'm 75, so I've been on the shows all my life.
Arthur's only a short man. He has a grey plait poking out from underneath his baseball cap. And he used to work for his dad's boxing tent. At every town where the show put up, they'd erect their tent and then invite locals to come and fight. And Arthur used to be one of the spruikers.
Can you give me a bit of a spruik?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this show has discovered some of the greatest fighters Australia and the world ever produced. My father started out in 1924, and he used to get to catch the train to the next show and fight anybody in that town. And that's how we started in this business.
Say I wanted to be a showman, don't have any family background. How would I go about getting into the show?
Oh, well, that'd be pretty hard.
To understand the show, first, you have to realise that land is passed down through generations.
Well, a lot of the shows that I do is the same shows that my mum and dad were doing way back in the 20s and 30s.
So, literally, this is the amount of space you're allowed to put your ride or your show bags or your games. And the only way you can get more space on a showground is you might inherit it. You might get it from your dad or an uncle. Or an old showman might die and you might do a deal and buy it from him. And this is completely sacred.
So do you have a base or is your home the show?
No, I live in a caravan. I've lived in a caravan all my life. I wouldn't know what a house was.
I asked Arthur if he could show me inside his caravan.
Yeah, I can do that. That's no problem.
It's covered with old photos of the show, and at one point he shows me a framed picture of a pygmy woman.
That's the pygmy girl, lady, see? That's your Bangi Chilliwingi from deep, dark, equatorial Africa.
Arthur remembers travelling with this woman. She was on the shows for about 40 years, and that was when it was vaudeville and freak shows, long before today's modern show, which is roller coasters and dodgem cars.
She ended up dying here in Australia. She's buried in Australia.
A few caravans down from Arthur is his brother Elwyn.
Right, well, you want to see home when it's away from home.
He's also shortish, but more of a silver fox, and he gets called this from time to time. And family is a really big thing for the showies. There are always kids around, and pretty much everyone calls everyone else an auntie or an uncle, whether or not they're related. As well as the owners, you've got the workers. And for many of these people, the show is the most stable family they've had.
They come as young blokes, most of them. They come when they've left school and they bits of knockabout blokes, you know, and they might be in trouble with police or whatever, or haven't got real good family lives or whatever, and they come away with the show. Well, there's a job to be done, and there's always somebody looking out for them and looking, you know, to see that they don't get into trouble.
Thanks all on the back of this trailer right here. Folds up. I call it my lunchbox.
Tyson is one of the Bells' full-time workers. He travels with them all year.
How long has Tyson been with you?
Oh, he's been with us for a while. I'll have to adopt him soon.
At the moment, he's running the music trip. It's a ride that spins you in circles, up and down and around, and talking to Tyson, it's hard to tell sometimes who gets more out of it, the punters or him.
They're always giggling to themselves, and I mean flat out giggling. It's just unreal.
You could say that Tyson was pretty much destined to be on the showground.
Even when I was a young fella, I was always on the move, always walking around the frigging town I used to live in and all the rest of it. And yeah, my mum used to always say to me, you got itchy feet, you just got to go somewhere, don't you? Yeah, look at me, 21 years later, I'm still on the showgrounds.
Win this game, you got to get me a bullseye.
Down from the music trip are the games, and this is the part of the show that I remember the most. And there's a whole bunch of games here that the Bells have. There's the teeth smash, the balloon pop, pick a frog, and it's also Brooke's favourite part of the show. Brooke's only been with the Bells for a year and a half. She works for Elwin's son, little Elwin, and his wife, Selena.
Come out and get all the joints ready so they're ready to be worked at night time.
Each day she pumps it all up, replaces the pop balloons, gives everything a bit of a dust, makes sure there are enough big fluffy toys that you want to win that night. Brooke's only 19 herself, and while she's showing me around, I notice the game that I remember the most as a kid, the bucket game.
Crazy nuts because I can never get it in.
Yeah, you've got to get three.
It looks so easy. Get the ball in the big bucket, but it pretty much always pops out.
It hits the bottom. Once you hit the bottom, that's it, you're done.
You just lost $10.
Brooke says it took her 6 months of practice to get good at it.
Oh, yeah, you would have lost a lot more if Chubbs was out here serving you.
Hey, how about you, Spikey? Two in, I'll turn you into a curly.
He's probably one of the best workers I've ever seen work a joint. Chubbs is, like, mostly the buckets is his game. Like, he's always known how to work them. Like, you got him out here, he wouldn't miss any shots. Like, he's just that good at it. He can stand there and not look at it and roll them in. Like, love to be able to work a joint the way he works it.
Chubbs, are you there?
Yeah, show secrets, mate. That's a work. We can put it down to show secrets, mate.
Chubbs?
I reckon there's three stages to being a true showy. To be accepted, you know, to be a brethren amongst us. I don't know, the first year you might rock up and you'll get known. Everyone might know your name, might even get a nickname. And then you might be around for 5 years, and then you might have your little friends. Then 10 years, all right, you're one of us, you accept it, sort of, kind of, you know. 20 years, all right. It's a long process. I've got another 5 years. Except I won't get a gold watch.
Chubb started working the show when it came to his hometown in Kempsey on the mid-north coast of New South Wales.
I didn't really have nowhere to go, and someone told me about the show, you know, I'll get a camp and, you know, a job, and I said, oh yeah, I'll give it a go. Get free Dagwood dogs at the end of the night. I was sold, mate. Now I still get free Dagwood dogs, but I'm not so sure about eating them.
Chubbs was 16, and he'd been left to fend for himself.
Yeah, no, I didn't really have nowhere to go. I was water the state. The Department of Docs said I was old enough to look after myself at 16, so they said, no, they're not continuing my supports. I'll go join the showgrounds. Yeah, I'll run away and join the showies. Yeah, so yeah, that's what happened.
That's pretty tough though, 16, you ought to be told that.
Oh, you know, like, I suppose, like, I was in that situation to begin with, so I've had tougher, I guess, so.
After Kempsey, Chubbs joined up, and he started to travel with the different show families.
They are a stability force, like, for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people who are lost. The showmen look after them, you know, a fair bit of lost Australians, so. Yeah, I don't think many people appreciate that. Yeah, give them a place to stay, give them a home, you know, like, give them some work.
Well, not religious, but the Ten Commandments are pretty right. Whoever put that all together was a pretty smart bloke. None of us worry about going to church, but you don't have to be a church person to be a decent person.
If they get a medium, they'll still pick from them. And then
down in the games alley, it's a few moments before the gates open, and Selena is casting an eye over everything. She's given the workers a bit of a pep talk, handing out their money pouches. And as tonight is the final night they'll be here, she wants to get rid of a bunch of toys, make everyone go home feeling really happy. Selena is Elwin's daughter-in-law, and she's like a big mum to everyone.
Brooke, that's been with us, how long? 18 months. And she's come from a broken family or whatever, so she's just like one of the kids. They're all pretty good, and I think if I treat them good, someone's going to treat my kids good, you know? I think wherever they are,
Queanbeyan's home to everyone.
That's where Erwin has a property, although they only seem to get there around this time of the year.
Like, it's a big place. Everyone loves it there. Everyone goes back there after we finish, like here. We go back there for a week or so and then get ready for the next show. They've become a lot like a family to me. Like, I don't really see my family. So, like, Selena's family and Erwin, like, their family's become a lot like my family.
That night, the carnival finally came to an end. The Bells had been in Bateman's Bay for 6 weeks. In a showy's life, that's a really long time. But next year they'll be back again. They've been coming here for around 40 years. They see a lot of the kids grow up. And you sometimes get the feeling that they're always on the lookout for the next Tyson or Brooke or Chubbs.
Yeah, no, we don't want to give it on a chance.
Someone they might pick up and take with them for a run.
When you're a big boy, we might take you for a run.
As the pack-up began the following day, Selena started to think about what the town is like once the carnival moves on.
We come here and you see young kids. You can come back next year and they're drug addicts or drunks or, you know, there's just nothing here for them. If you drive uptown tonight, it's like a ghost town. There's nothing here when the carnival's not here. It's a bit depressing, you know, the last few days. And that's the little kids, they do the same. They're like, where do we go now? Where do we hang out? I can't wait for the school holidays and the carnival to get here, and then when it's all packing up, it's like, oh, you know, it's over again for another year.
But a showy is born to travel.
What's the longest you've ever been in one place?
This is the longest I've been in one place. After a week or so, I'm bored stiff. I like moving. You'd like to sit down steady, but no, I'd prefer to be moving.
And do you think you'll be travelling until the day you... till the end?
Yeah, I'll be travelling. Dad died on the road. Mum died on the road. So I suppose I'll do the same.
And that's all we've got time for today on Long Story Short.
If you want to listen to any of our stories again, you can subscribe to the podcast or find us by going to the RN homepage. There's links to our Facebook. You can leave a comment, listen to the stories. It's kind of like a show bag.
Less of a show bag, more of a radio show.
A show is not a show without a show bag anyway.
It's actually nothing like a show bag at all. It's not a show bag.
Bang! That bloody bottle smash!
Long Story Short is produced by Winding Track and Creative Nonfiction in association with RN. The RN series producer is Lorena Allam. Sound production today was by Andrei Sharbanov.
You've been listening to Long Story Short on RN. I'm Mike Williams.
And I'm Jesse Cox. We'll see you next week.
I feel like a Dagwood dog, Jesse.
We never actually had the Dagwood dog, did we?